The gospel text for today is chapter 6 of Mark's gospel. This is Jesus visiting his hometown, going to his relatives, and their response and also a commission to the disciples to go out and mission the world. Jesus left that place and came to his hometown, and his disciples followed him. On the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astounded. They said, "Where did this man get all this? What is this wisdom that has been given to him? What deeds of power are being done by his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joses and Judas and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us?" And they took offense at him. Then Jesus said to them, "Prophets are not without honor, except in their hometown and among their own kin, and even in their own house." And he could do no deed of power there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and cured them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. And then he went about among the villages teaching. He called the 12 and began to send them out two by two and gave them authority over the unclean spirits. He ordered them to take nothing for their journey except a staff, no bread, no bag, no money in their belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on tunics. He said to them, "Wherever you enter a house, stay there until you leave the place. If any place will not welcome you and they refuse to hear you, as you leave, shake off the dust that is on your feet as a testimony against them." And so they went out and proclaimed that all should repent. They cast out many demons and anointed with oil many who were sick and cured them. Gospel of the Lord. I'll deal with the last part of the gospel first. The phrase, you know, shaking the dust off your feet is something that is used many times in various venues. In fact, I've heard in a couple of political speeches this phrase being used, if somebody doesn't listen to you, shake the dust off your feet and walk away. This is a symbol, really, basically, of the time of Jesus' preaching in Gentile territory. And these guys, the disciples, are sent out into Gentile territory. Remember last week we had the Gerasenes, the Gerasene demoniac, the one that lived in the tombs and was gashing himself, etc. That was in the Gentile territory. And so Jesus is saying, when you go into a Gentile home or into a Gentile residence and they don't accept you, when you leave there, shake the dust off your feet so that you're not contaminating yourself or the temple. See, by touching Gentiles, you contaminate yourself. So shake the dust off your feet. It was an absolute refusal to anybody that doesn't want to listen to what you're talking about. Just leave it all behind because you don't want to be somehow unable to worship God anymore. It's an interesting thing. But that's not the point of the story. The gospel this morning is kind of a mixed one, but I'd like to focus on the first part of the story about being with the family. Now, last week when we had the story of the Gerasene demoniac, remember we said there were three parties in this? There was a sense that they were very comfortable with this scene, that this demoniac lived out in the cemetery and howled in the woods and on the mountains and all the rest of it, and people were used to his being in that place because they were safe. While they were in the town, they also agreed that he should not be part of the town, and it seems to be a mutual kind of respect, I guess. It's a situation that they had gotten used to. Rather than dealing with him altogether, inviting him to be a part, he was separated, he was comfortable with that, and so were they. Well, Jesus comes along, and the demoniac comes down from the rocks and has a conversation with Jesus, and Jesus ends up curing him. And the people are terrified because, first of all, they saw 2,000 pigs, the legion of pigs running down the hill and dying and crashing into the ocean and dying. Their world was upset. what they had known and liked very much, that arrangement where he was there and they were here and there the twain shall meet. They were very comfortable with that. And Jesus changed the whole dynamic by addressing the issue with this man, having a relationship with this man that allowed him to become changed and freed. And instead of following Jesus, Jesus says, no, go home to your friends. Go into the town and start relationships there. This is the same kind of situation we have here, where people are very comfortable with what they believe. And now along comes Jesus, who was one of them, and he's talking nonsense. He's saying things that they can't handle. He's doing things that they don't understand. That certainly shouldn't be in his purview because he grew up here. We knew him since he was a kid. Now, how does he get this wisdom? Where's this coming from? You know, who is this person? And so he is not accepted. So you have that dynamic. We're not comfortable. We push him aside. And we go on with our business. That dynamic, brothers and sisters, is something that we have all seen in our own lives. If you talk about someone being silenced, and Jesus, I think, was silenced by his family, by the relatives, by the people of his town, he had nothing to say. He was silenced. What happens when a person is silenced? What happens when somebody doesn't want to listen to you? Have you ever had an experience of somebody not wanting to hear what you had to say? What happens is there's a great doubt. We're not talking about husbands and wives here, you know. I see these lies going back and forth. One of Louise's very famous sayings, I said it's going to be the epitaph on her tombstone, is nobody ever listens to me. She ran this huge department at the hospital for many years, and that was her big complaint. Nobody ever listens. If you do what I tell you to do, everything will work fine. Nobody ever listens. And she says it to me from time to time, too, and I go, yeah. But what happens when somebody doesn't listen to you? If it's somebody important? What happens is, first of all, your self-esteem goes down the tubes. You lose respect for yourself. You become perhaps maybe judgmental about yourself and say, what's wrong with me? You are forced to turn inside and watch yourself decompose in front of your own eyes. You have no power. You have no image. You have no respect. You are rendered silent, truly silent. Now, that's a common experience. If you look at the people in Jesus' gospel stories, the ones who are most needy are the ones that have no voice. And people who don't have a voice, in the words of Walter Brueggemann, the great biblical scholar, are people who are in such despair that they cannot entertain or anticipate anything. And least of all, can they accept anything new? Change. Because they're so unfounded. They're so upside down that they don't see any possibility. So I know in the years of doing therapy and listening to people in confession, people can get so caught up in what has happened that no matter what you bring to it, no matter what suggestion you make, it doesn't resonate. It can't, because they are rendered powerless. Now, in Jesus' time, remember the people, the Jews, and even the Gentiles were under the occupation of Rome. The Gentiles fared a little bit better because they went along with Rome as much as they could. Like anybody in an occupied country, you go along to get along. You know, you don't like it, maybe it's really hard, but you do what you have to do because you want to survive. The Jews, on the other hand, had something together that did not fit into the Roman colonies. They had their own religious belief, which was not a religious belief as much as a way of life. And they were bound by God to live that way of life. And so they had to be silenced. And so for the most part, they are silenced. And Jesus' family and the town he grew up in, those people were silenced. They had no voice. And along he comes, a Jew, one of them, one of their own, and he's saying things that are causing a lot of trouble. He's doing things that are challenging even the little system that they had. The interesting insertion here that Jesus makes is when he finds himself not being heard, he starts talking about a prophet. A prophet is not heard or respected in his own town, in his own house. Many of the prophetic voices we've heard over the years, the centuries, who now we see as people of great wisdom and insight, suffered a great deal because of what they were saying at the time they were saying it, and people did not like it. They were comfortable with what was. That's all they could handle. Let us get through this. We don't need any trouble. I was thinking, isn't that the very same thing, same dynamic that existed at the time of the revolution in our own country? This being 4th of July weekend, it's interesting that the paper had printed the Declaration of Independence. And I read it again. And one of the most interesting things about the Declaration of Independence was, first of all, they gave voice to the voiceless. They stood up to the system and didn't say the system was wrong, but they were not afraid to point out the ills that were caused by the system. And they defended their brothers and sisters, the people who were voiceless around them, by saying that whatever we do, whatever we say, whatever we decide, there has always got to be room for God, because God can do what we cannot. Which is why this country ended up being founded on a principle of the divine. Because they happen to be Christians, it was a Christian God. But in the Declaration of Independence, God is a major player, because God gives the foundation and a texture to all the things that they could come up with in their words and in their plan to make things better for everybody. And there's such prophetic wisdom in that. Because if you look at the Declaration of Independence from 1775-76, all the way down to today, gazillions of words have been spoken around that declaration. And more laws, like our Constitution of the United States, grew out of that declaration and grew out of that body of 35, 40 people. Those early colonists that had a sense of God as the one buffer that would make everything work. Because in their wisdom, they knew that humanity, being what it is, we are all prone to kind of look for power. We are prone to get our way and kind of set up things so that some people are silenced because we don't want to hear what they say. And so we have amendments to our Constitution that protect our right to speak, to be able to voice, to gather in protest, to do all these things, precisely because unless that is there, people are not free. This was not a government like the ones that Jesus grew in. That was an occupation by anyone. It was a government by people, but by people who understood that God was essential in the journey of everyday life. And as things have turned out, it's very interesting how God is there present at the beginning of the Senate or the Congress or whatever, and how quickly the values of a godly people vanish when we start talking politics. In so many ways, people are becoming less and less verbal. many of us go along to get along. And we get nervous, if you're like me, when you read somebody that's coming up with some cuckoo idea that is from out here, that may have a lot of wisdom, that may be exactly what we feel in our hearts, but have difficulty allowing because of the fear that somehow it'll upset the apple cart, and then what happens? And we are so well connected with each other that it's hard to separate us from the crowd. And when we look around the world today, you look at what Greece is going through right now, the people of Greece voting right now about their destiny. And on the next page, you read about Boko Haram, who has just killed another 50 people, innocent people massacred because for no reason. Or the whole idea that celebrating 4th of July became kind of a national cause of alert because of threats being thrown around. I look at America and I watched two versions, the 2013 rerun on CPTV yesterday of the 4th of July celebration. It was light outside. And I said, how come it's so dark there? Because the fireworks were going off and it looked wonderful. So at the end, it said 2013. I said, well, no wonder. And then I watched the one that was there last night and listened to some very important words being said and music being sung and presence about who we are as a nation. And I had a sense of pride. But I have a sense of worry as well. Because if we look hard at ourselves, and reflecting on ourselves is very, very important. I have to ask myself, is the God in me, or the God that I know, somehow reflected in what's happening around the world? And in my part of the United States, is God a part of it to such a degree that indeed there is a new brand of justice, a new sense of fairness, a new understanding of equality, a better appreciation of we are the people, God is God, and we are people? And I worry, and I pray. Because I don't think God ever intended anyone to be silent. Anyone to be so despairing that they couldn't even begin to anticipate tomorrow. Or anyone to ever not be able to see that something new is not necessarily dangerous. It's a simple gospel story. There's no answers for any of this. But it just struck me on this 4th of July weekend how far we have come and yet how far we have yet to go. I pray for our country all the time. I hope you pray with me. And anyway, nothing happened on the 4th of July to the country. And so let us be grateful. Amen.